Okay.
Well, greetings and welcome to the Austin Meeting Group monthly open Zoom call. Today is Thursday, August 6th, 2020. And I'd like to thank everyone for joining us this evening as we welcome and extend our gratitude for our special guest tonight. Ray has agreed to share some of his ideas and experiences with us about public oaths and bonds. And he's got a few years of experience searching and finding these important records, which are legally and lawfully available for the specific purpose of holding bad actors accountable to their fiduciary duty and to their job, both sides of the fence. So now I understand, and Ray understands, and many of you on the call understand that there's a difference between a fiduciary duty as an element of a trust and a job description in commerce. There's a fence between those responsibilities, and in my opinion, being allowed to sit upon that fence presents a serious conflict of interest, which likely should not exist, but at the very least requires the appropriate and adequate notice and training to all the categories of people which that conflict of interest affects. And so my point is that way too many people are overly uninformed of the differences between these two functions. And as a result of this, all kinds of unnecessary chaos and injury occur, especially to those who are innocent and unable to defend themselves from the mistakes and abuse of overreach. But what makes matters far worse to me is that most people aren't even curious once they've been given notice. They're choosing to ignore the previously settled law, choosing to be ignorant, and choosing to ignore what it actually means to be an heir or a member of the posterity, which is a part of a very unique class of people intended to benefit by the grantors of our country trust and also meant to steward that trust. And the grantor's intent and purpose for our country's trust is for us to better protect our sacred gifts, the sacred grants that we've been given by the Creator, which so many throughout history continue to expand their trespass upon. So my hope for all of us, state nationals and state citizens on the call this evening, is to learn more about our public duty as trust protectors, to gain a better discernment of what it means to be a beneficiary and a steward. And as our friend David Strait says, we have two primary duties with our stewardship of this great trust. And one is to correct the errors that our public servants make, and two, to ensure that they won't happen again. And so tonight I want to welcome my friend Ray, as I believe he has some important things to say about holding bad actors accountable for the errors they make in violation of their oaths and fiduciary duty to the people who are entitled to the protective covenants of our treaty law and to the constitutions of our country, which they've sworn an oath to and have insurance bonds to help those who those errors injure. And so, Ray, I would like to extend my sincere gratitude and appreciation for your generosity in joining us this evening and sharing some of your experience with us so that we can learn and become more inspired and organized. So I'd like to welcome you to the meeting.
Okay, well, hello, everybody. This is Ray Ezra. Rob asked me to speak about the oath of office and bond tonight, risk management, insurance. I told him I would be honored to do so. I appreciate all he does for America. America is in a war. The people are being challenged to see who will question and resist tyranny and who will lay down. It's been that way for a long time, but it is increased to a apex of intensity right now. And unfortunately, most people are laying down, as can be seen by the number of people wearing masks and closing churches and businesses without question. We are in urgent times, and the time is close. And that time being that the people wake up from the slumber and figure out that allowing incremental abrogation of rights leads to having none at all. So I'd like to start by reading this. Galatians 5:1. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty what with Christ has made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. So think about that. That's in the scripture. Has anybody ever heard this in church? No, because they don't even go in that direction, which is where the light is, the truth. So let me start by saying that nothing I share tonight should be construed as legal advice and is for information purposes only. Also, are there any undercover agents on the call? If so, announce yourself. Are there any undercover agents on the call? If so, announce yourself. Are there any undercover agents on the call? If so, announce yourself. Okay. So here we are today dealing with Corona 19 fraud and the COVID-19, excuse me, and riots are happening, attacks on people, destruction of property, removal of historic monuments, infringement of rights, businesses going bankrupt, schools shutting down, public officials and people blatantly admitting they are communists and Marxists on TV, which would never would have happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, to come to that point. We have governors passing executive orders, which are not law. Mayors and city councils passing ordinances that are not law. Executive orders, statutes, and ordinances are not law. And this is all very serious. Serious as a heart attack. And it's all smokescreen for other things that were happening. So we watched that while financial collapse and reset happen with CARE bills that are QE, quantitative easing in disguise. And most people didn't catch that President Trump turned over the federal government to FEMA in March of 2020. About the same time all this corona fraud started. But there's more to meet side with that too, but that's another discussion. So the enemy is in the gates. And the events I mentioned cannot happen unless sponsored, endorsed, and allowed by public officials in office that are advised by legal counsel in the city, like, you know, in the cities and counties and the state. So the subject I'm bringing to the table, which Robert and I have talked about a lot, and a lot of my buddies and friends and studiers, is why do the American people allow their representatives to break the oath of office, a federal crime, and not hold them accountable? And as I started getting more active, I kind of got into this and kind of tapered off. And when this started up, I got back into it pretty heavy. And what I realized is because the people do not know what the oath of office is. What I found is no one is reading the Constitution of the United States of America, the Bill of Rights, Constitution, the Bill of Rights of the state they are in. They do not understand contract. They do not understand that the United States and the states are operating under the Administrative Procedures Act, 1946, that there are four arms of government, not three as we're told. And the Administrative Procedures Act is not constitutional. The courts are administrative tribunals, not judicial courts. They are pirates. And even most of them have no clue either. I found that out. And the crimes are many and have been for years, and it's all coming to a head right now. So that's one reason I agreed to speak too, because something's got to be done. I don't know if it's because most people are asleep because of the government education system. I think so. And that TV and media are mind control. And everybody wants to be entertained, amused, and focus on material gains. But mind control is indeed in action daily. If you watch TV, that's what they're trying to do. So everybody on this call, I assume we're all awake here. And all we can do is all that one can do, but we can do that and never give up, just like the scripture, like Galatians 5:1. But we, the people, have the power. And they are scared of those of us that are awake. And you will see if you go do some of these things I share. The ink pen is mightier than the sword. They're trying to get people into a, violent oppositions, but they need to understand or they have us fighting amongst each other while they watch. Go after the head of the snake, not the body. So years back, to make this short on a little introduction, I've studied a lot, and I can't name everybody I've studied, and it's helped me come to this conclusion and action I take, but I do have to come in and give recognition to Rice McLeod and the Republic of Texas. And a guy that turned me on to the oath of office was named Kevin Hines. Put out a little cassette tape back in the 90s. I mean, back in the early 2000 area, 1, 2, or 3, I can't remember. And that's what started with me when I listened to the cassette tape. Also, I like to commend Randy Kelton. Yeah, I've learned a lot about him, especially having a lot of backbone. So I want to start off with just letting everybody know, for example, I would bring up just the basics. What is contract? What is a contract? So people have to understand a legally binding document establishing rights and duties between parties enforceable by law. These public officials are in contract. And what is a breach of contract? The binding agreement that is not honored by one or more of the parties to the contract. So if they break contract, they breach the contract. They trespassed on it. And what is the Constitution? It's a contract. And what is the Bill of Rights? It's an amendment to the contract, explicitly listing rights that cannot be infringed upon. Like that in that cartoon, Back Off, with, I can't remember that cartoon character, but the cowboy fella. I think I had the one with the Roadrunner. But rights, another thing has to be understood, excuse me, rights come from God, not government. Rights listed in the Bill of Rights are rules about what is allowed of people or owed to the people, we the people, when you read the documents. And the Bill of Rights are restricted clauses that cannot be tampered with, and if tampered with by governor, done without authority. So what is the oath of office, the subject of the call tonight? That's a contract to support a contract. Who takes the oath of office? You've heard of people, you've heard of government officials when they're sworn in. That is the oath of office, and that is where they are sworn in to become party to the contract to hold that office. And if they do not adhere to the terms of that contract, anything they do is invalid. So constitutional, this applies to constitutional officers and administrative agents. Who's sworn in? President, vice president, the House of Representatives, state and federal, Senate, state and federal, governors, attorney generals, secretary of state, county commissioners, sheriffs, mayors, city councils, chief of police, state patrol, police, district attorneys. So what are color of law violations? They are violations of the oath of office. They are actions taken by public officials without authority based on fraud, which violates their oath of office, trespasses on it, to support the Constitution and Bill of Rights. So one thing you want to write down is Title 42 and Title 18. These were created by Congress in the 1800s, 1871, to police public officials for color of law violations. And that's why they were created. If they were not violating their oath of office and operating under color law, those titles would not be needed. They apply to them. Now, a lot of people say, well, we don't need to look at the statutes, and I disagree, but because the statutes don't apply to us, and that's true, but they do apply to them. So when I started this, one thing I started doing, and it's a lot easier now because we have the internet with Cornell and, you know, everything like that, and Cornell and Justice or Justia.com, Justia.com, is you can pull these things up rapidly in a few minutes and do quick searches and find the statutes at large, codified statutes in the state you're in, which are the corporate directives for that state. And then we have corporations impersonating states, impersonating government. So I researched Georgia, and I'll talk some about the Georgia statutes, and they will be the same in Oregon. I mean, not Oregon, in all the states. Oregon, I'm just going to say that because I just did a little journey on Oregon, and I had to tear that apart through the Oregon revised statutes and found the same thing, which is all the way to the other side of the country. They are going to be different in the states a little bit, but they're all going to be more or less the same. So this here's an example right here. Title 16, Section 10, I mean, Chapter 10, Section 1. This is Georgia Annotated Code, statutes. The law is the Constitution. These are statutes, but apply to them. So 16.10.1, violation of oath by public officer. Any public officer who willfully and intentionally violates the terms of his oath as prescribed by law shall, upon conviction thereof, be punished by imprisonment for not less than 1 year, nor more than 5 years. This will be in every state. When you go and search your state statutes, intentionally search the oath of office and the bonds or the risk management statutes. Also, I always like to look up guns, you know, rifles, pistols, and look up the statutes pertaining to them, because I assure you what is being expressed to you may not be correct in that state. Now, the state I'm in Georgia. So it's a pro-gun state, so more or less it's pretty opened up on the guns. But, you know, you're getting some of these Democrat states, they'll play games. But given that violation by oath of office statute I just shared, what I ran into is that what these people, for example, when you dance with the county recorder, because they will not record records. They will not record land patents. And it is not at their discretion to do anything other than their job description, which is that county recorder is a constitutional mandated position, and they have to record the documents. And what's going on is legal counsel is telling them what to do. Do you think county recorders, deputy clerks, mayors, county commissioners, etc., understand the penalty when they follow legal counsel directions, given the statute I just read? Do you think they understand what's there when they're following directions from an attorney? And that attorney will go down too, but their head's on the chopping block. The attorney will not take the whipping post. So they have obligations they don't understand. I was at a meeting recently. There's a big Patriot Alliance being created right now. I got up in front of 125 people. I explained the oath of office and bond. And the guy that hosted the meeting at the pavilion said, how many people here have heard what he just shared? If you haven't heard what he shared, raise your hand, and everybody raise their hand. The people don't know, and we have the power. So when you get in these situations, you look up these statutes. You find the oath of office and bonds in the state, and you use affidavits, a verified affidavit, a written verified affidavit of truth, of facts, voluntarily made by the affiant, you, under oath and affirmation, notarized. And you have to list what took place. If you get into a situation, write it down immediately like you're writing a little story. Convert that to the affidavit. List the due process list what took place in order and the due process violations even referencing the statutes, if you can find them, into the oath of office, I mean, into the affidavit. At the end of every affidavit, this is what I always did because I saw this in the oath of office and bonds I pulled. And I have folders of oath of offices and bonds and insurance contract, risk management contracts, just from doing it for years. And even doing that, you won't believe. But when you end the joiner, I mean, when you end the affidavit, you create joiner. And that is a term that is used in the realm of contracts to describe the joining of two parties to a contract. I always end the affidavit this way. I hereby accept your oath of office in this matter as a firm and binding contract, whereas you will protect my rights as you swore, so help me God. We just went into contract. Their oath of office is to the people, but the people have to accept it to create joinder between the public official and you, one of the people. Be sure that whatever you write in that affidavit is true and correct, firsthand knowledge. Because if you do a verified affidavit under penalty of perjury, it better be true and correct. So municipal officers are covered by either a bond, a surety bond, a fidelity bond, or a risk management insurance contract, which will have employee dishonesty clauses in it. And what is a public official surety bond? Well, it's a statutory obligation. Again, it's obligations that come on them per the statutes. Statutory obligation requiring faithful performance and fidelity of that public official. And it's an instrument by which a public officer and a secondary obligor undertake to pay a fixed sum of money if the officer does not faithfully discharge the duties of his or her office. They call it different things, and they'll play games with you when you call. Legalese stuff, like you say, well, I want a copy of the statute, the surety bond. We don't have that. Because they might call it a statutory public official bond. It's just a play of words. But that's why you want to look in the statute to see how they're playing those words. And those bonds or insurance are mandated by the statute, which means mandatory. So the public official or officer is the principal in that arrangement. The government entity is the obligee. And the bonding company or insurance company is the obligor, is the surety obligor. So surety bonds are required by state statutes payable to the governor in Georgia. Now, this is what I found out looking at Georgia. For example, it says surety bonds required by state statutes are payable to the governor. So then the governor has to give them down to the party that's been injured and being indemnified. Conditioned on faithful performance of the duties of office. They are statutory bonds found in the state statutes. And as I said, there's many different kinds. So here are some of the statutes pertaining to bonds in Georgia, and you want to locate these in the state you live in. Now, this is what's important to understand. This is a very important one here. OCGA 45-423, places for keeping bonds and copy of bonds. In Georgia, in the counties, the oath of office and the bonds are kept in the probate court. That doesn't make it so in the other states. They're all different. What I found, for example, in Oregon, the county recorder had the oath of offices, and the board of commissioners, which they call the county commissioners here, kept the bonds and risk management insurance and such. And so, but here it's all in probate court in this state. So you'll have to figure that out either by calling them directly, which I recommend. I like to look up the statutes before I call. I like to know the answers before I ask them, but act like I don't know and see what they do. And then direct them if I have to. Ask for the supervisor. I know I want to see your supervisor right now because you're not And what is, and always get every person's name and write it down. Everybody's name. So 45.423, places for keeping bonds and copies of bonds. This is Georgia statute. All bonds taken from public officers shall be kept in the places specified by law, and copies thereof shall be furnished to any person desiring them. Period. If they never ask me why, they don't need to ask. I just desire them. That's all you need to know. And if they tell you any different, then they are violating their oath of office. So that's one reason I do it. I see if I might end up having to go, you know, dance with that one. But another one. You want, now again, I'm reading these just for everybody to hear because, because you want to look for them in your state. Official bonds, actions on bonds. 45-43. Return of bonds to specific officers. Actions on bonds. All bonds taken by public officers under the laws of this state shall be returned to the officers specified by law, and any person interested therein may bring an action thereon in his own name in any court having jurisdiction thereof. Anybody can bring an action on that bond in any court. 45.414, time for filing bonds. The official bonds of the public officers required by law to be filed in the office of the Comptroller General, Secretary of State, or with the office of the governor, shall be filed within 40 days after the election appointment of such officer. All county officers shall have until the first day of January following the election to file their bonds as required by law. So every state could have different numbers, but they have to be filed within 40 days or 30 or whatever that state is. And the Secretary of State is the hub where you can get answers. And when you call them, always be polite. Talk to them, get their names, and they'll help you. Because that's what they do to me. Now, they might run you in circles a little bit. You'd have to be persistent. 45.424, another statute. Bond obligations of principal and surety, conditions required for existence of cause of action on the bond. They're telling you in Georgia, which I'm sure it's there, on talking about actions on the bonds. Now, this is all based on, of course, violation of oath of office, breach of contract. Bond obligations on the principal and surety required for the existence of cause of action on the bond. For any breach of the condition during the time the officer continued in office or discharged any duties thereof. For any breach of the condition by a deputy, although not expressed in such bond, unless otherwise declared by law. Then you get down to four. For the use and benefit of every person who is injured. Now, remember, I'm reading about cause of action on a bond. For the use and benefit of every person who is injured either by any wrongful act committed under color of his office or by his failure to perform or by the improper or negligent performance of those duties imposed by law. So a breach of oath of office can be doing things under color of law, color of office, which there is no authority for. Under presumption, or by failure to perform. So if I say, if I go to the county recorder and I want to record land patent, affidavit, or whatever, if I want to record something on a McDonald's wrapper, cheeseburger wrapper, better record it because that's failure to perform. So I always pull up the job description. You can pull up their job description in the statutes as well. And then to continue to the next one, no claim or cause of action shall exist against the bond, the surety, the principal, and no claim or cause of action for indemnification. That's what we're talking about when you've been injured and have damages. If your rights are violated, you have been injured and you have damages. Your rights are property. And no claim or cause of action for indemnification by the surety against the principal shall exist unless one of the following conditions exists. So the conditions that are required are operating under color law or failure to perform their job description. So as you can see, we have a lot of power on our side, and it really comes down to Hosea 4:6, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And just like what we're encountering here in this country right now in America, these things that are happening that we're seeing on TV and Instagram and YouTube and Facebook are orchestrated and supported by public officials who are in contract and can be basically removed from office. And another thing, when they are removed from office for oath of office violation, even if they don't go to prison like that one statute said, they lose their pension and they can never be a public official again. So I'm just wanting to express the power of understanding the oath of office, which lists the terms of the contract. That's why I like to pull them. And the bonds which are there to indemnify us when they operate under color law. Here's one right here, 45425. I'm telling you, it is there. It is written. I mean, it's just in Georgia statutes. I found them in Oregon. It took a while. I've seen them in Kansas. I've looked at Kansas, Nebraska, different states. I mean, they're there. Actions on the bonds of public officers authorized, name in which the action is to be brought. Actions on the bonds taken from public officers may be brought by any person aggrieved by the official misconduct of the officer in his own name in any court in this state having jurisdiction thereof without an order for that purpose. No action shall be instituted or maintained in any other state. Well, that's not. So, and it's coming under official misconduct. That's a term to remember. And I could go on. Here's another one, measure of damages and actions on official bonds, misconduct of the officer. And it gets down to, unless specifically enacted, shall be the amount of injury actually sustained. And, well, your injury, if your rights are violated, any of the first, you know, Article First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, they're doing it all the time, including the reasonable expenses of the action to the plaintiff and the cost of the court in all cases when little or no damage is actually sustained and the officer has not acted in good faith, the jury may find for the plaintiff an amount as explanatory damages, punitive damages. Punitive damages are to punish, which taking all the circumstances together should not be excessive or oppressive. So if you're in any type of situation right now, from a traffic ticket to any type of court situation, pull the oath of office and bond immediately on the parties involved. So you want to pull those office and bond on the police, the sheriff, whoever, the judge, prosecuting attorney, district attorney. Another thing, these oath of offices, most people don't understand that all the attorneys with the bar, they'll be in the bar in the state they're in, they have taken the oath of office that is also listed with the bar. And you can file complaints with the bar for oath of office violations on that attorney operating under color law with no authority, and they will drop that attorney's license too. I've just had a long conversation with a friend earlier before the call where a woman had done this, and she went to study the law, and she took it to heart, and the prosecuting attorney started crying and begging. Of course, when you get to that point, show no emotions and operate with extreme prejudice. They would have on you, and you're doing a service to the country to get them removed. So these are things you need to know, too. Another thing I call it prudent estate planning. Even if you have no problems, go pull the oath of office and bond on the people in the county. And watch how they act. Everything will change. You can tell, I realized how powerful they were, that it was the Achilles heel when I first started going into, now of course back then, this is before all this corona nonsense, but you could just walk in and request them. And then in some states they will give them to you, in other states they will tell you you have to do an open records request. But I would just walk in, and you could tell by the reaction when you do this that it was good, because they get excited, they don't like it, they want to know why, they freak out. So you know if their hair stands up on it and smoke blows out their ears, you're doing good. You know, and if it doesn't, if they just calmly look at you, you know, or whatever, well, it's not doing much of nothing. So you can tell when you're really getting to them. The difference now, there are also bonds on public officials that are separate, and there are also blanket bonds where one bond will cover the whole county. An example, here's a county right here with a blanket bond, and this blanket bond covers all of these parties: child support receiver, child support receiver employees, clerk of state court, clerk of superior court, clerk of magistrate court, constable, coroner, county police officer, county administrator for probate court, county law library board secretary treasurer, county library board, county surveyor, county treasurer, deputy clerk of superior court, deputy coroner, deputy sheriff, jailer, magistrate, probate court judge, sheriff, tax agent, tax collector and tax commissioner, tax receiver, and warden under one bond. If that bond gets damaged, what do you think happens? They're all under one bond. Much more dangerous than being separately bonded. On risk management insurance, it's going to be covered under employee dishonesty, which follows, you know, which actually encompasses color of law, or failure to do their job description, which they do not have discretion to do otherwise. And in fact, you know, I'm located over here in Georgia in Lamar County, and they record everything. Why do you think they do? Because they know they're doing their job descriptions. And you hear across the United States, they won't record, and I tell you, it's the people in those areas are going to have to rise up and remove them from that office. Spank them. Ruin their career. I've told many of them, I can share some stories, but I want to go over these main points first. But, you know, I've had issues where I get into it with them about that, and I tell them, and I accept their oath of office and bond right on the spot. And I tell them this, I said, and they'll threaten me. I've been handcuffed. I tell them, I said, you do what you think you need to do, and I'll do what I think I need to do, but it's a career decision. What's that mean? It means what it means. I've been pulled over and asked if I was an attorney 4 or 5 times in a row. No, I'm not an attorney. Well, how do you know? How do you know this? I read. They don't know what to think. But then there's court bonds too. So there's many different types of bonds. There's court surety bonds that are used to protect parties from losses arising from a court decision or fraudulent actions. These law firms all have bonds if they're litigators. And guess what happens if you make a complaint on that bond? If they've been, you know, operating under color law or fraud. Well, you damage that bond too. Now, one thing I've come to realize lately, too, which I confirmed in a conversation a little earlier, which I was pretty much thinking that since I called, I just start calling everybody. So I called the surety companies and I talked to them. And I want to know the process and where's the form to to file a complaint on a bond. And I told him why. They're going to try and so what you have to do, you have to create that verified affidavit of truth to support it. You take that, you get that claim form, you attach it, and you send that to that surety company with a notary presentment, second attorney, notary. First notary notarizes the affidavit, second notary does the mailing, notary service, with the claim form and hit it. They're going to try and get out of it. They're going to contact that representative. And what happens as soon as that is filed, they've got a problem already. Even if it's rejected and you have to take it further, you just damage the bond. It's based on it's like credit history. It's kind of like on your credit report. Their credit starts going down immediately and the rates start going up. Or like if you get too many speeding tickets, DUI, same thing. They'll drop it. And if you can't be bonded, guess what you can't be? That public official, if you're unbondable. So claims and history of claims directly affect their ability to secure bonds in the future. And this is right on the bond websites too. And plus I called them. And the risk management, just like the public dishonesty, it's used to indemnify the insured for certain losses arise from dishonesty or other enumerated conduct. And that conduct is operating under color law. So when you do these things too, you have to understand the pecking order, which many people didn't understand on how everything's really working. But if you go back and study history, which I confirmed a lot after taking the class, the Ron Gibson class on land patents, and studied Georgia back to the beginning in 1777 or 76, whatever it was when it started. I can't remember the exact date, but the county commissioners were shown back then in the constitutional records, and the county commissioners run the county. If you have complaints with the sheriff or other officials, file a complaint with the county commissioner. Go after the county commissioner. Pull the county commissioner's oath of office and bond. If you have problems with the police, go after the mayor. They had a situation in town up further up. I don't even know who they were. I wasn't involved with that, but I know that the police were out of control and they went after the mayor, pulled his oath of office and bond, sued him. He fired the chief of police and half the police department to protect himself because he was a career mayor. So, and plus the bonds have to be repaid. They only cover up to a certain amount. Some would be $5,000, $25,000, $20,000, $100,000, $250,000. But if the claim exceeds the bonds, and even if it doesn't, they cover it. And the language in the bonds is that they have to be reimbursed back to the bonding company. This is why they get so nervous. So any misconduct, document it, write it down. And do that. Now, what I've done in this state here, too, I'm going to kind of change the direction here. Everybody needs, but you need to take and go to your state and pull up. And I'm talking about because the current times are in and read the executive orders in your state. You need to read the executive orders. When I pursued and obtained, I have the oath of office for the governor of Georgia, and I have the risk management insurance contract for the state of Georgia. And they ran me around in circles a little bit, but because I read the statutes, I just took charge and made them, give them to me. So this needs to be done in all the states, and mainly in the Democrat governor states, where we know this chaos is taking place. And read the language in them. And I'm not talking about every executive order ever passed. I'm just talking about when this coronavirus nonsense started, which is causing all these problems. But start reading at that point in March and read up to now and read those orders and understand those orders all are relying on every state from emergency management statutes passed 8 or 10 years ago. And they're saying their authority comes from a statute which does not supersede the Constitution. And that's the authority for the executive orders, which are statutes, which are not law. Constitution's law, then there's statutes, then there's ordinances. And the Constitution supersedes the statutes, statutes supersede the ordinances. Currently, the governor in this state is suing the mayor of Atlanta for trying to pass ordinances in conflict with the statutes, which it doesn't work. No more than passing statutes which are in conflict with the Constitution of the state and of the United States of America. So that's the key, is understanding your rights. And as judges have said, if you don't know your rights, you don't have any, but you have to understand the Bill of Rights, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and the ones in your state. And additionally, usually the state Bill of Rights are even more empowering to the people than the federal. But every Bill of Rights, you'll have multiple, could have multiple rights listed in one. For example, Article 1 or First Amendment, religious freedom, both to an establishment as well as the free exercise thereof, freedom of speech, freedom of press, and the right to petition. So there's four right there within the First Amendment. Some of these things, if you know it, these masks, I don't wear them. I just tell them no. I don't explain nothing. I just say no. So we have to, you know, you have to know who you are and that you're not any of this fictional legal person that any of this applies to. You're the man or woman, one of we the people, and you just have to act. They know when you know. They can tell by your conduct and everything you do. So given that, I could share a few instances, but, you know, when you know the Bill of Rights and memorize them to the best of your ability, get a little book that's called the Citizens Rule Book. You'll want to get that. And it's got some powerful information. Back when I was registered, before I revoked my registration to vote, I had it in my front pocket one time at jury duty. They saw it, removed me from the lineup immediately when they saw that little white book. It's right in your pocket. It's pretty simple what I'm explaining. You have to own it, internalize it, recognize it, stand over it. And when you do, you become powerful. Now, given that, I'll answer some questions, but I did want to say this. I came to the realization on some, and some of my buddies may be on the call that helped me with that or not, but I had a little run-in with a town up here quite a few years back. And traffic, I took that ticket and I returned it within 3 days, went straight into clerk of court. And I wrote on there, your offer of contract is refused. I do not want to contract with you. I do not know who you are. And you've been noticed. Wrote it in red diagonal, took in two witnesses into the clerk of court. Noticed her, had them both sign, left her one affidavit, I took the other. In fact, my buddies, I didn't tell them what I was going to do. And one of them told me, he said, I didn't know you were going to do that. But when I came out, I didn't hear anything for a while. One of them said, well, you might have a bench warrant. I said, well, let's find out. Okay, so then I took that affidavit and I actually noticed by certified mail. I also do use certified mail, and I put the certified mail number on top of the affidavit. And I will, I noticed the mayor, the city council, the chief of police, and the policeman, which was a lieutenant in the police department. So they went to call him. What does this mean? Well, it means what it means. Well, you can't do this. You need to go to risk management. I mean, internal affairs. No, I don't. I don't work for the police department. One thing I did was this is another thing nobody does. Research the statutes. They apply to them, not us. I researched the ticket. Nobody ever questions what does 45.6 violation mean or 248.12 or whatever's on the ticket, and dig deep in it, because as I dug deep, it came where I finally found that it applies to officers and employees of the corporation, the municipal city. I don't work for the city. So why do I want to file a complaint with Internal Affairs? That's for y'all. That's what I told the police on the phone. And if you claim I work for Internal Affairs, if you claim I work for the city, where's my pay? Show me my paychecks and I'll accept that. Well, they didn't know what to say then. They didn't know what to think. But that's the case. So what happened was, what I'm getting to is that you can tag team them like that wrestling you see on TV, and they won't know what's going on. And this is what they do to us. So why not? So as I was messing with them, I had another friend start requesting the bench warrant that didn't exist. And then I had another friend go in dressed like a Philadelphia attorney that started doing it. Well, I think they thought the feds were coming in or something, because they freaked out. So then I hit the judge and the clerk of court, and I said, I sent him a certified mail letter. I said, hereby request a copy of your certified copy of your oath of office and bond. You have 10 days to reply. You're in default. I got both of them within 10 days. Now, back then, I didn't know what I was doing as much as now. It's probably like 2005. So when I got them, I was kind of really almost surprised and wasn't sure what to do next, because the clerk of court was operating without oath of office because it was notarized the day I requested it, which I would know what to do now. But I would get her removed and get that insurance bond and file on it. In fact, back in the beginning, I didn't even mess with the bond. Everything I was in was just based on oath of office. I didn't start pulling the bond till later. And that's when it really got squirmy. So they'll give you the oath of office, but they'll really start freaking out on the bond when you get that. So what I'm getting at is that I'd mentioned it to Robert and my friends who are on the call. Sure, I know some of them are. And we can band together as a group of people and straighten this out. We've got some urgent times here. And an example is what I did in Oregon. I have nothing to do with Oregon. They had no clue who I was. They said, "You're not from here, are you?" I said, "No." That's all. I never volunteered any information, but they knew it wasn't. They could tell by my accent, my area code. But I ended up calling the Secretary of the State. I called the Elections Division and the Audit Division. I ended up calling the county. I was calling to talk to the Deputy Clerk of the County Recorder. I was calling the Board of Commissioners for the bond. Talking to the Executive Secretary, and they never asked me one time a direct question. Anything, but I ended up getting all that information with the risk management insurance for the whole county and the oath of office for legal counsel and the deputy clerk. And I know it caused a bunch of confusion, which is best time to go after them. Right now, there's confusion in the country. Another time, this is good. This is very timely. We have confusion within the system itself with so-called Republican against Democrat. More so, or maybe more like communist versus fascist. I don't know. But there's confusion. And they're weak. And there's a lot going on. If I lived in Chicago, if I lived in Illinois, I would go after that Chicago mayor. And if somebody wants to, as a group, I can tell you what would happen if that person started requesting oath of office in. And it's going to be a city, so it's going to be risk management insurance on that mayor. And all of a sudden, 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 more of us start doing it too. And they will have no clue what's going on. And it will just blow their mind and they will freak out. And they will become weak from freaking out, because we'll make them full of fear. And we'll come after them. And we'll file complaints with them. You know, you can go as far as Title 42, 1983 is on them. They can't handle that. It's about $300. You can file this stuff into public record on them. And that's one good thing, is just file stuff into public record. And as soon as they refuse, say wrong answer. and just go after them and get, and the clerk of courts, they have to be, they're going to have to be removed down here nationwide. Half the mayors, city councils and all too, it's out of control, the governors too. But I can tell you this, one reason I pursued the governor is I just wanted to prove it could be done. The Georgia, for people that are awake, we have to know who we are. The Georgia executive orders, I read them, and I saw, now I can't claim I've read everybody's, but I've read New Mexico, Colorado, and South Carolina. They didn't have it. South Carolina's Republican state, Georgia Republican state, the other two Democrat state. If, and this is what it said in the executive orders in Georgia. If any provisions of these orders are in conflict or violate the Constitution of the United States of America, the Constitution of the state of Georgia, or infringe or violate any rights, those provisions of that order are stricken as though they were never there. It's sitting right in the executive orders. I've told people about it here in Georgia, but mainly, you know, people that are being really damaged. So like business owners and such like that, churches, I've told that to churches and business owners, but they'll do nothing. But he actually put a back door in the order for the people that are awake. Now, I can't say that's in every state, but I wanted to bring that up. Okay, I think I've kind of went on a ramble for a little while. It's about an hour, so I better be quiet and hey, give it to you, Robert.
Wow. Well, thank you very much for all that. That's very, very high value information. And I think the key is, like you're saying, trying to gather a group of people who can work together and be organized at making a difference. They've been picking people off, you know, individuals one by one. And it's much harder when you have an awake and alert and vigilant group trying to keep the peace. I'd like to see, Noel, are you available?
I'm here.
Very good. I wondered if you wouldn't mind giving a brief, description of the event that you went through recently. And,
thank you, Rob. Thank you, Ray.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you're welcome.
I've never put a mask on. And I, until the governor, I'm in Minnesota, until our governor just about a week or two ago gave the executive order to mask. It was after that I started getting some dirty looks from people. And I think it was last Saturday I went into Chipotle. And during the height of all of this scamdemic, before we knew for sure that it wasn't real, Chipotle's employees didn't wear a mask for 3 months in that place. Now, all of a sudden, there's an executive order, and the cashier, not, I'm presuming she's not a manager or anything, just a cashier, really unprofessional. I'm 35 to 40 feet away at the door. She's yelling across the room, "You have to have a mask on." I'm sorry, I have a medical exception, and I have a religious exception. She keeps yelling at me to put a mask on, and the guy two dots ahead of me, he's like, starts giving me some guff and says, "Oh, you're one of them." And so now I'm in it with him. Another employee runs out, "You got to have a mask on." I'm like, "I'm sorry, are you a licensed doctor? I have an exception." And he goes, "It's right there on the," oh, I said, how can you tell me how your corporate policy trumps my rights? And he points down, he goes, "It's on the door." I go, "Is that a law or is that your corporate policy?" And he keeps going, "It's on the door, it's on the door." So then they run back in and call the police. And I heard them mumble because they got masks on and I can't really tell what anybody's saying because I can't see their face. And I can't hear their muffled mouth, and 90% of communication is all the other things going on other than the words coming out of your face. So I'm standing in line, and three police officers storm into the place. The one guy goes right up to the cashier and asks, "Who is it and why do you want him out of here?" And she points to me and says, "He doesn't have a mask on." Now, I have quite a history with all the police officers in my city, so they all know me. And they've been told by their city attorney, she never wants to see me in court, don't give him a ticket for any reason. And I hear about this from other city employees. So he says, "You got to leave or we're going to force you out of here." And I say, they told me I'm trespassing. I go, "Why am I trespassing?" "Because they don't want you here. And you can either leave by four, you can either leave or we're going to," and then I'm like, "I'm not going anywhere." Then they surround me, like they rushed all around and gang rushed me. And then gave me another chance. And I'm like, "Well, under the threat of force, I have no choice." So then we go outside and we have a debate. I asked them to identify themselves and they wouldn't. As I was walking out the door, apparently there's a couple of people that were recording, and the last things out of my mouth before I go out of the videotape was, "I'm going to take all you guys' bonds." But I go outside, they won't identify themselves, they won't give me their information. I make them on my own video tell me what the reason was, and they keep telling me that this is a private business and they can make any, they can have any policy they want. I'm like, "Okay, can they say no blacks? Can they say no people in wheelchairs? Can they say no Muslims with masks?" They can't. So how can they say if I don't have a mask on and I have a medical exception that I can't be in there? So this all happens, and basically there was a big standoff. They guaranteed I was getting a ticket. And I called the chief the next morning and the prosecuting attorney, and they wrote good things about me in the police report, and no ticket has been issued because they won't give me a ticket. But I'm like, "Okay, I want your guys' cameras, and I need to know who those officers are so that I can look their bonds up and file a complaint." So I was physically kicked out of Menards. And I filed a police report. Now I was under color of law and corporate policy, physically, basically removed from Chipotle. So I don't know what's going on here. I have an unalienable right to commerce. I have a religious freedom. I have a medical freedom. I believe there's a whole bunch of things going on here. But finding out, oh, and then Minnesota law, it's a misdemeanor to be in public masked. And I believe, I can't find the law, I had it at one point, if you're carrying a weapon and you have a mask on in public, that's a felony. I have three police officers. The chief asked, the sergeant asked me the next day, "What officers were there? Were they?" I said, "I don't know. They wouldn't identify themselves and they were all wearing masks." So they're standing, so the city police is standing on that business is private, but you're a police station and you're a corporation and you're enforcing private policies. The property's zoned commercial. They're incorporated into the state. You know, like they're all the zoning ordinances, everything. How do you even prove, you know, what the police didn't, what have they done to validate that somebody's private? You know, private to me is a trading company. No taxes, no authority of the government. Not a Chipotle or a Menards that are incorporated into the state.
Yeah.
So that was my most, and I'm afraid to go anywhere. Like I mean, I go places, but I just dread, oh my God, I got to walk into Costco, you know, oh, I got to walk. And all the places so far have been really good. I was at my co-op and the guy came up and said, he goes, "Mask?" And I said, "No, thank you." And he goes, "Okay." I said, "I can't wear one." He goes, "Okay." And he walks away, you know, but Chipotle and Menards so far.
And Menards, is that like a Walmart?
Menards is a building supply contract place like Home Depot, but it's regional. They're like 5-state area out of Wisconsin in the regional area.
Right. Okay, so I didn't know what that was. We don't have that down there.
Right.
Right. Well, understand what I, okay, so here's the thing. Those police wouldn't ID themselves, which they're supposed to, but you know who the principal is? The mayor.
No.
Yeah,
the mayor is the principal?
The mayor's the principal over the whole police department. So go after the mayor.
Wow.
Pull those officers and bond with the mayor. And write everything down. And write it down in your little, like a, you know, it's like a little story, novel. Because that's be created to a, converted to an affidavit. I would say if it was me, and if you really understand, it's payday.
Right.
Because you need to look up who the CEO and the CFO of Menards is, and who's the other one?
Chipotle.
Yeah, Chipotle. I'd look them up too. I would look up both of them and start preparing verified affidavits on the whole thing. And understand this. You can stand on constitutional law or statutes. You know, whatever is in your favor, because remember the statutes apply to them. Because listen to this.
Right.
This is Title 42, 2000A. It's called Title 42 of the Civil Rights Act, Public Accommodations. All persons shall be entitled to the full and equal enjoyment of all goods, services, facilities, privileges, advantages, and accommodations of any place of public accommodation, as defined in this section, without discrimination on the ground of race, color, religion, or national origin.
And I'm a national.
They just violated it.
Okay.
Yeah, or national origin, doesn't matter, religion. The First Amendment is very powerful. And people are, you know, everybody goes to church, but why is everybody, if everybody's going to church and are Christians, are scared to use it? Why do you think it was put there? It's restrictions back off. If your religious belief is you don't want to wear a mask, then don't, and they will pay if they force you to or do what they did to you.
Did you see what Attorney General Barr sent out to all the state attorney generals about 3 weeks ago?
No.
It was a 2-page letter thanking and confirming all the aggressive prosecutions for anybody hoarding or price gouging frontline supplies. But now we need to turn our attentions towards constitutional right to freedom of religion, and that he's prompting all state prosecuting attorneys to go after anybody infringing on the right to religion, because this state of an emergency does not trump the constitution rights. Barr sent that to all the state prosecuting attorneys, I think 3 weeks ago, as a notice that they were going to aggressively be prosecuting all religious infringements.
I put 200A. It's actually, I'm typing into the chat. People are asking what I said.
2000A?
It's 2000A?
Yeah.
2000A. So look those up. And that applies, like when you look at 2000B, that's another one. Well, it's 2000AB. You'll see it right behind it. And I put it in there, right? Yeah. Each of the following establishments is a place of public accommodations within this title if its operations affect commerce or if discrimination or segregation by it is supported by state action. Anyway, this gets into any inn, motel, hotel, any establishment, and it just goes right on down the list. Restaurants, cafeterias, motion picture houses, I mean, you name it, it's all in there. And so that's about one angle right there, as well as if it's your religious belief, that's the First Amendment to me, which is stronger. Mm-hmm. If my religious belief is that I don't want to wear a mask, don't. Now, it's different. It must be, and I know it's different in every state, so you're a little bit hardball. I went into Walmart. They said down here it's all everywhere. You have to wear masks. You go in. I went there Friday, last Friday, and they have one side of the door closed, and you have to go in the other, and there's masks. People, everybody's wearing masks, and you have to go down this walkway, and you come in there, so I walk straight in, no mask. And I think, I mean, I know they're spiritual. This is all spirit. The whole battle is for our thoughts. So when I go in, she says, sir, the mask are right here for you. And this is what I did. I looked there and I said, no. And I walked straight in and did my business. I don't argue with him. I don't do nothing. No. That's my
is there an Is there an angle that telling somebody they have to wear a mask is practicing medicine without a license?
I don't know about that. But
okay.
I just don't.
Because
I just
you
don't,
have to
recognize debate. Okay. I don't recognize debate.
Right. Okay.
I'm the sovereign. I'll tell you what to do. When I go in the, if I go in the courthouse, I pull the oath of office and bond on the courthouse here with no problems. This is an example in other courthouses. I walked in. I forgot I'd even done it a few weeks later because I'm so used to doing this, I don't pay any attention. I walk in, the clerk of court, I talk to him, the deputy clerk's in there, and he said, Ray, we have a large workload, we're understaffed, but we always try and adhere to the Constitution of the United States of America and of the state of Georgia. I looked at him, I said, okay, that's good. And I thought after I left, I said, no, why did he say that? Then I said, oh, hell, I forgot. I pulled those off and bond on them just a while back. And in fact, when I pulled the oath and bond, the way you do it too, is you take charge. You just don't, you know what I mean? I'm not saying I wouldn't have conflict up to there, but I would prepare for it. And because when they didn't give me the right bond, I went back into the courtroom. It was out of date. That's what it was. It's supposed to be kept current. And they said, well, you'll have to call the probate judge. I said, really? She said, yeah, that's what the clerk told me. I said, what's the number? She gave it to me. I just dialed it right then on speakerphone in front of everybody. Judge, this is Ray Griggers. I'm standing in the probate office. You do not have current bond information on public record as mandated by the statutes. When can I get it? They're all stopped. Everybody stop what you're doing. She said, I can have it to you Monday. I said, that'll do. That'll work. And so, okay, blah, blah, blah. We're talking. I was social. I mean, I wasn't like obnoxious or anything, but then hang up and they all just looking and out I walk. So they know when you start doing this, what you need to do is go get the mayor's oath of office on, and then those
but not the police officers.
You don't worry about them. She'll fire him.
Okay.
Or he.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, you go after him or her. I'm not saying it's a, you know, I don't know if it's a male or
right.
female. And list the police officers and question them because it's all on record that they came in. And you can, if you have to, you can come after them with like a Bivens. If you sue them a Bivens, I can't remember that term, but they have to disclose it. You can find out who anybody is in discovery. Believe me.
Yeah.
The mayor will not risk her or his profession or occupation, you know, over the police officers. And, those companies are bonded and insured.
Menards, they do have bonds.
If they're open to the public, they're bonded. They got insurance. You damage them, you can get money from them too.
What about an insurance company? An insurance company like American Family, they would be bonded also, wouldn't they?
One thing I found out too that I was going to share is that pulling these bonds and risk management, I started calling the bonding companies. And I don't even have to go to court. I mean, I can just get the claim form. You want to get the claim form? That's why it's so important to get that bonds or insurance information contract. Because once you find out who they are, you can call claims and say, well, can you email me the claim form? What for? Tell them. I'm about to file a claim. I've been injured. No different than a car wreck. See, so your rights are property. And so you have to understand that if your rights are violated, it's no different than if somebody ran into you at an intersection in another car. You see what I'm saying? And we're not treating it right. So you can, they have claim forms with the bonding companies as well as the insurance companies, and just get them and file a claim.
And how do you find the bonding companies?
You have to get it from the county or city. That's what I'm saying. So just like I was reading you, I flip back. That's why you want to go to start studying the statutes in Minnesota.
Right.
But just like the statute I read to you a moment ago in Title 45 in the Georgia statutes, on the bonds shall furnish to anyone desiring them. All you got to do is desire them and let them know you want them. If they run you around in circles, just keep pursuing like I did in Oregon until they finally admitted that, you know, they gave me the stuff. They gave me the goods.
And you do that at probate?
No, see, that's Georgia. That's what I'm getting at. So everybody, listen up. Look at your statute. And they will tell you, they will reveal where everything is and show the power you have as one of the people. Because the statutes apply to them. And every state's going to have statutes, oath of office and bonds, and oath of office and risk management insurance. And so you have to sit and realize none of those statutes apply to us. I don't have an oath of office and bond. Who does? They do. And it's showing the cause of actions. It's talking about color of office. It's talking about color of law. It's the penalties on them. So in 1871, when they passed that Civil Rights Act, actually Title 42, 1983 is deprivation of rights under color of law. When they operate under color of law, any statute, any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom willfully subjects any inhabitant of this state, territory, or district to the deprivation of rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or to different punishments, pains, or penalties on account of such inhabitant being an alien or by reason of his color or race, then are prescribed to punishment of citizens, shall be fined not more than 1,000 or prison not more than 1 year or both, and if bodily injury results, shall be fined under this title, or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both, and if death results, shall be subject to imprisonment for any term of years or for life. No trespass. Well, that was the Ku Klux Klan Act. See, this is why they're destroying history. You have to understand history, too, you know, besides the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. And that's why they're wanting to destroy it. So the war between the states, there's been no republic since then. And it's all corporations impersonating government. And there's, I mean, Congress fell apart. 11 states left, South, and Congress never reconvened, signed, die. It left dead ever since then. First executive order came from Lincoln. No constitutional authority. So they passed these laws under Title 18, which is criminal, and Title 42, civil, specifically against, really, to punish the South in the original time, but they're still on the books, for public officials that wouldn't obey and recognize the Constitution and were operating under color of law. So these Title 18 statutes and Title 42 statutes are on the books and should be looked at in the United States Code. You can pull them up on Cornell and read them. There's one that, in fact, like Bonnie was talking about, Title 42, 1988, is full of them. Redress for grievances. So the Title 42, 1988 is proceedings in vindication of civil rights. That's when the judge is operating out of control. So it's full of them. And you pull oath office and bond on that judge too. And they won't want, they'll act like they don't have a bond. If they do, you call the Secretary of State. They've got one. They've got either insurance or a bond. It's going to be one of the two because they're operating in commerce and they cannot operate without insurance. They're in commerce. That's why every courthouse is shown on Dun and Bradstreet as a private corporation trading on the stock market. That's
can
why.
Can I?
Go ahead.
I was in court two winters ago, and I pulled the Duns and Bradstreet on the court I was in. And Duns and Bradstreet, when I read it to them, it said that the court was out of business. So I asked them, who the hell are you? And the judge and everybody in the room looked like I just climbed up on the judge's desk and pooped because in front of them, because I read like their phone number, their address, their name, and it says out of business as I'm holding up the paperwork. And they, and I'm like, who the hell are you if you're out of business? So I had done that in open courtroom, and I never did find out what their new Duns and Bradstreet business is, but the one that they were operating under set out of business.
If I may, I would like to see if Bonnie is available to join our conversation. Bonnie, can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hello. Hi, Bonnie. Excellent to have you. Thank you. I had asked you about the Clayton Act and was wondering, isn't there something about an interference with your right to commerce there?
Yes, it's an antitrust violation act, and I'm going by memory. I don't have the book in front of me, but I've read it many times. Sherman Antitrust Act with the interstate commerce, where it enjoined, goodness, again, I'm going by memory, people from not being able to cross state lines and do, you know, contractual things with other states or people in other states. I think the Clayton has to do with intrastate. So I'm in Texas, you know, and if you had, it's basically an anti-monopoly clause where the whole thrust of it was to keep things, and that's what this is creating. It's creating these big monster companies like Home Depot and Best Buy and Costco and Sam's and Walmart and all these big, huge publicly traded companies. They're creating a monopoly. That's what they're doing. They're putting the little man out of business, who is having to enforce these laws or municipal ordinances that are not laws, but, you know, everything's built on belief, right? If people believe it's a law, they're going to follow it, which is just retarded because people aren't thinking straight. But anyway, the whole point is the little guy's going out of business. So that creates a monopoly. And because these big companies that are publicly traded on the securities exchange, they can afford to have their customer base disappear. I mean, they're traded on the stock market, but the little guy, the little mom and pop businesses are going to go out of business with what they're doing. That's what they're, that's the thrust of this, is it's creating monopolies out of the big retailers. And, you know, we're all going to hurt. The whole anti-monopoly clause, we have an anti-monopoly clause in Texas Constitution 1.26 that forbids monopolies. It says, you know, it's contrary to the people's rights. You know, monopolies hurt everyone. Why? Because competition is good, right? It keeps pricing fair, where you have a monopoly or a duopoly offering products or services. You know, it can be dangerous. It can be dangerous to the economy and the end user. If they only have two choices, and those two choice companies, like Costco and Sam's, for example, if they decided to price fix and you needed that product and you couldn't afford it because they agreed in advance that they were going to price their apples at, you know, $40 a pound, you know, where people couldn't afford to buy apples. You know, you're just using that as an example. That's creating a monopoly, and that's what's going on with this mask wearing and putting the little guy out of business, intimidating the patrons, and really thrusting a lot of people. And what I see is people are going to be, they're harming themselves by wearing a mask because it's reducing their oxygen supply to their lungs. So a lot of people are going to be dying from ARDS, acute respiratory distress. They've done studies I've seen. It might have even been Rob that sent me a video where people that are breathing with these masks on are only getting 17% oxygen when you need 22 to 28% oxygen. Well, what happens to those people? Their organs start shutting down one by one. They start having liver failure. Well, why? Because it's not getting oxygen to the liver or the kidneys or the other parts of their body like the brain. And people are suffering from depression. I mean, all kinds of things are negative. Our government is attacking its own people. But it's not just us, it's happening all across the world, right? From, I guess, the United Nations countries, anyway, that are implementing this silly ordinance. Anyway, I yield.
Thank you, Bonnie. I guess we might be able to take a couple of questions. Ray, if you're willing to accept a couple of questions.
Sure.
Down on the bottom, there is a reactions button. And if you have a question, if you could go ahead and click the thumbs up. Let's see.
I see we have 67 participants. That's good.
Yes. We had
67 people.
Yes.
Straighten a lot of this out.
That's what I...
They're educated.
Now we're having a conversation that I understand. Okay. I guess you could put your hand up, too. I see that. I'm looking for Joe here. Let me see if I... There he is. Joe, it looks like you're unmuted.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I can hear you. If you go ahead with your question.
Very good presentation. I could ask you a multitude of questions. However, the one thing that kind of ties in with what Rob and Ron have been doing with the land patents, the question I have is the interference that one's going to run into in getting these filed. I've gotten past most of that. The question is how do you make the public notice without running into butting heads with the county officials? Should we go ahead, in your opinion, go ahead and just gather up the oaths and bonds of all of those people in the county government before we ever proceed with posting our notice of filing?
Well, now the county recorder recorded the land patent?
Not yet.
In the public record?
Not yet. Have not filed them. We must file a notice, a public notice, that we have intent to file the land patent. And Rob, help me out here, if you will.
Right, I understand what you're saying. Yes,
what I'm talking about.
You're going to want to go in there and pull the oath of office and bond on the county recorder and the deputy recorder. Everybody has to do recording those documents in the public record, which is mandate. It's not their discretion to do otherwise. Pull it.
And do that before we do anything else.
Yeah, just go ahead and get the ammo.
There you go. That was my point.
Yeah, and then they're going to know now, see, and they could even change a lot of things. So they're going through that, they're going to know you've done it, of course. And then you go in there and say, I want to record this in the public record.
Right.
And if he or she says anything, or the attorney, hell, go ahead and ask them if they have legal counsel, you want to pull his too. See, what's going on is these legal counsel, these attorneys are telling them what to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They're just as liable, but the constitutional officer is the county recorder or the clerk of court. They call it in Georgia, same thing, but that's the one that's, you know, besides the attorney, it's going to take a whipping. The attorney's going to, you know, I mean, they're mandated. It's not optional.
Well,
another thing is I pull up the job description of the county recorder, the clerk of court, in the statutes.
The district attorney is the big problem here because he is telling the county clerk to record legal documents that are fraudulent on their very face. Oil and gas companies are filing leases and easements and stuff that encompass a whole township. And, you know, on some of our land that we have not given any easement to, they just file it, and the district attorney tells the county recorder or county clerk to file it. So we've got them in a breach right there. So
pull his too. I mean, it's the term I use.
I intend to.
Yeah, I use that term pull, but really what I'm saying is request.
I understand. And my dad preached this to me 50 years ago, what you're saying, and it's just getting more and more meaning to it all the time. And I applaud you and thank you very much, Ray and Ron.
Where are you located? Where are you located?
North Central Oklahoma.
Okay.
We have a mess here in the state of Oklahoma. You talk about a mess. Our state government can't even keep up with the treaties they make with the Indians, even the last 10 years, much less the ones they made 100 years ago.
And they're reneging.
I'll tell you what, it's a mess.
I want to share this too, just like I opened up the call with Galatians 5:1. It's a spiritual battle. Make no mistake, the spiritual jockeying
for power. The evil one is with us.
And you will be moved by the Spirit. I am. When you go up against them or you go to straighten stuff out, fear is sin. You know, just don't have any fear and go in there. But, you know, just go in there and look at the statutes. And if it's a city, you got to look at the city. The city will have, it's like right now, I've just pulled oath office on the mayor of Atlanta. And I'm about to get the risk management insurance, what you're trying to hide, because I might just go mess with her. I mean, I haven't had any issues with them, but call it prudent estate planning. You know what I mean?
I hear you, man.
And go ahead and get them. But on your situation, yeah, pull that clerk of court, that legal counsel, that district attorney, get their oath of office and their bonding, their bonds or, you know, risk management insurance, and find in there in the statutes before you go, everything about that, you know, about their bonds and oath of office, and it'll show that they have to give it to you if you request it.
I'm with
and
you.
They have to, it'll also show they have to record what you bring in there. It's not their discretion to. What I found when I really searched deep in Oregon was I even found the list of documents that have to be recorded, mandated for the county recorders in alphabetical order. And when you go to page 15, you come to L's, and there's land patents, state and federal. And they're blocking it. And it's right there mandated. Not only is it a violation of the oath of office, but it's mandated right there, showing a list of documents that have to be recorded and when brought in. So look for stuff like that in Oklahoma, you know, and you can go, like I see some people are posting maybe stuff about, you know, land patents. I mean, not land patents, statutes. You just go in there in the search engine and type in whatever state you're in. I'll just make this up. Say you're Montana, just put in Montana statutes or Oklahoma statutes. It'll come up. It'll show Oklahoma statutes at large, or it'll call it Oklahoma revised code or whatever, you know, it'll have some very, I was with a friend the other day and we pulled and I pulled it up right quick. It didn't take me but a minute because I'm used to doing it. And right here, Delaware code online. Went straight to down to, I was used to looking at it. I said, well, look, there you go. There's courts, criminal procedures. I went straight to counties, Title IX. I pulled right up there into counties, county governments generally. I still got it open and went straight in there to county governments, pulled right up and start talking about the oath of office right there. And start talking about what was interesting is, you know, I don't know how it's presented there. And you'll find stuff like this. This is Delaware. The county government shall enact no law or regulation prohibiting, restricting, or licensing the ownership, transfer, possession, or transportation of firearms or components of firearms or ammunition, except that the discharge of the firearm may be regulated, provided by law, ordinance, or regulation. Incorporate the justification defenses as found in Title 11 Delaware Code. So right there, they can't tell you a darn thing. Now, what blew me away when I looked at it, this is the very language in the Georgia executive order. The Georgia executive orders have this. Shall enact no law or regulation prohibiting, restricting, or licensing the ownership, transfer, possession, or transportation of firearms or components of firearms or ammunition. In the executive order, there shall be no restrictions. Now, I don't know if it's because the Georgia governor is a Republican, if the Georgia governor's been spanked or what, but I'm not seeing that in some of the other states where the Second Amendment is reserved and protected, as well as provisions that say, if any of this is unconstitutional, just say so and it don't apply to you. Problem is, ain't nobody wanting to say so.
Let me make one more comment here. You know, I'm involved in or getting ready to be involved in some litigation. And it used to be the state of Oklahoma had bonding requirements on pesticide applicators back in the early 80s. Well, they removed the bonding requirements and changed the law to liability insurance. Whereas the liability insurance puts the risk on every pesticide applicator, but the bonding requirement made the person have their own skin in the game. So if you're in a state that has a bonding requirement and you go after that bond, that guy's putting up his assets. It's not the state that's putting up the assets. It's his own assets.
That's right. That's what it says in Georgia too. Actually, they cover it, but then you got to pay it back.
Yes.
So that means they got to pull it out of their hip pocket. Or right. As I told
or their, house, game, or their house or their farm.
Right. I mean, that's what I told. I run into it a game warden. There's a presumption that the game warden's the highest law enforcement in the county. I said, bull, it's the sheriff. It's right in the Constitution. Where you get this? Oh, everybody knows. No, they don't. So I get into it with him. He's armed. I'm armed. I'm deer hunting. Very dangerous situation. But I told him this. I said, yeah. He said, I'll do this and that to you. I'll do this and that. This is what you tell him. Say, you do what you think you need to do, and I'll do what I think I need to do, but I'll own the house you live in and the toys your children play with.
Bingo.
He backed, and he got mad as can be and all this stuff, but then he left. Because we have to call the bluff sometimes, and it's unfortunate that way because they're used to. They got mad at me for not letting them search my car in Missouri without a warrant. And I stood up to them, and they handcuffed me, and they fabricated. It's so out of control. They handcuffed me, broke in my car, took my drinking water, and said I needed to confess because I carried distilled water in containers instead of buying it at the store. And I said, to what? We're going to send it to the lab. Send what? This. They held up my water. I said, well, that? They said, yeah, you might as well confess. I said, it's water. They said, what do you do with it? I said, I drink it. What do you do with it? I'm handcuffed. I said, take off the handcuffs. I'll drink it. They all looked at me. They said, well, I guess we'll believe you. I said, well, you might as well. But this is, I told them, I said, this is how out of control everything is. And I told them. And another thing people need to understand this, everything is procedural. Everything. The radar gun, you can ask for the records. They have to keep logs. When they brought the dog, I said, are you the certified handler for this dog? I said, I need to see the certification papers. You're a certified handler of the dog. I want to see when that dog was last calibrated. And I need to see the certification papers on who calibrated the dog. They screaming and yelling at me. Said they're going to throw me a county lockup. They said, who told you this? I said, Georgia State Patrol. They said, Georgia State Patrol don't know shit. I said, really? Well, one of the main maxims of law, all the laws uniform in every state. None are more strict or no more lenient. They're all the same. So it's that way in Georgia, that way here. Screaming and yelling at me. I knew. I said, I'm fixing to go to jail here, but whatever, might as well stand up. I had an AR-15, 500 rounds, 4 pistols loaded. They never said nothing about them.
There was a woman who ran the state crime lab in state Oklahoma. Joyce Gilchrist was her name, and there were no less, fewer than 7 people put on death row because of her either mismanagement or fabrication of bogus evidence that put them in jeopardy. And you know what? All she did was lose her job. She's still getting a pension. Well, that's the way Oklahoma runs.
It'll ride the way the people let it ride. I go to the John Birch Society meetings, and this is what I tell them. They're complaining. Of course, they don't want to play hardball. They're like, oh, we can't do it. But I told people at meetings, many, many meetings, I told them at that big Patriot meeting, I said, you know what the problem is? They said, what? I said, go look in the mirror.
Bingo.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. I would like to invite Bonnie to see if she might be interested in adding anything to the oaths and bonds part of the conversation.
Bonnie, I really enjoy. Yeah, I am. I really enjoy hearing the content because, you know, we have an out of control situation here in Texas continually. A good friend of mine told me a story of somebody tried to file some paperwork on a traffic citation today, and the court clerk called the cops because she did not recognize the fact that an affidavit of truth, filing an exhibit of the ticket saying, I do not consent to contract with you, was attached to the affidavit of truth, denying that there is any contract. One of the most powerful tools, you mentioned it earlier, is that affidavit of truth, because truth is sovereign in commerce. Truth is expressed in the form of an affidavit that's the maxim of law. And when you start stating your living status as a living man, because, you know, they've capitalized all of our names in all caps name. A lot of people don't know. And when they do that, they create a corporation. And so they operate over you as if you're a corporation. Well, corporations don't have rights, but living men and women do. So you're assumed to be a corporation unless you state otherwise. So an affidavit of truth saying you're a living man, created in the image of God. You can quote scripture all over. Scripture, one of my favorites, Genesis 1, 26 and 27. And then you go into the affidavit, right? I'm of majority age, right? Because they assume that we're all infants. I live on the land, not on the high seas, because that's one of the presumptions that they use against us, is that we're lost at sea. And you say, I'm not lost at sea. I'm not an infant decedent, meaning a dead baby, which is what the IRS has called us for years in their statutes and codes. So you just rebut a lot of their presumptions. You start putting your facts in there. This is what happened on this day. Here's how my rights were violated by John Doe, right? I do not consent, and I demand that this official be removed from office. He willfully and intentionally violated my Fifth Amendment rights. My Fifth Amendment rights have been in force since December 15, 1791. This is nothing new. He cannot claim a qualified immunity in any case. You can put a long list of the facts in an affidavit of truth swearing under penalty of perjury, just like you said earlier, having signed by notary. Well, you know what? They're not going to respond because you're going to demand in that affidavit that they respond to your affidavit. And, you know, if you're a generous boss, you can give them 30 days. If you're not so generous, 21. If you're not so generous, 14. Give them a certain amount of time. Say, my affidavit of truth stands as sovereign in commerce unless it's rebutted. So I demand if you're going to rebut my affidavit of truth, you need to do it within 14 days, right? Otherwise, it becomes fact and law, and I'm entitled to a judgment as a matter of law. You have the power. People don't know this. You have the power as a living man or woman, right? What does it say in the 9th and 10th Amendment? 10th Amendment is all powers not granted to one of the other three branches is retained by we the people. Well, guess what? That gives us all power, right? Because they have limited power. We don't think like that, though, do we? We don't think that we're the ones with all the power and they're the ones with the limited power. They're the ones with the handcuffs on them. What handcuffs them is our Bill of Rights, right? And the state's Bill of Rights is supposed to give even more liberties than the U.S. Constitution. U.S. Constitution is the floor, it's not the ceiling. The state can even give richer protections for criminal prosecution or free speech rights or whatever. States' rights are supposed to be richer. But you can cancel a statute if it's unconstitutional. And we have states just like you're talking about that will take away guns, try to criminalize gun ownership. Why? Because they have a genocide agenda plan for every one of us. Sad to say, but those are facts. So when they criminalize innocent conduct, whether it's traveling and you don't have a driver's license on you, well, you know what? There's U.S. Supreme Court decisions that say it's not necessary. You can, as a living man, eliminate that statute right off the books. Send your affidavit of truth of how that statute has injured you as a living man or woman. Send it off to all your alphabet soup agencies. I just recently did one this week where we're eliminating a statute that runs in direct conflict with the Second Amendment. Just eliminating it. Getting rid of it, telling it's unconstitutional, you will remove it from the books now, because it's being applied to living men and women that are not employees of the corporation, and it's harming and injuring the public interest. I mean, you know, they're going to get a big shock when we start removing all their fraud from their statute books. People believe that those statutes apply to us. They don't. Just like you said earlier, applies to the corporate employees. I don't work for the city, the state, or the feds. Those rules apply to them. My God-given liberties allow me to do whatever the hell I please as long as I don't injure anybody, right? It's all about injury. Have I injured you? Where's the injured party? And you're fighting a traffic ticket. Okay, I'm happy to pay restitution. Where's the injured party? How was I operating in commerce? Cop pulls you over. The first thing you say is, I'm operating in the private. I'm not operating in commerce. I'm not transporting goods or people for money. Look in my car. You don't see anybody riding in here. I'm not a tax cab service. I'm not transporting goods here for money. Just operating privately. Anyway, I really appreciate all the content you share. It's very rich. I'm going to replay it and listen to it, share it with all my friends. Thank you so much. It's great to hear you guys. God bless you.
Thank you for that, Bonnie. Appreciate you too. God bless. We have Brian Dozy. If you are available still, you can go ahead with your question. I'm trying to unmute you. Brian, you look unmuted. We may have to move on and come back to you, sir. Jessica? It looks like you're muted.
Unmute. Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yep. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, I'm from California, and I'm in the states, the California Assembly. And I have my paperwork done, and I'm working on my driver. I guess it's a letter to the DMV, because I did discover that we actually, the vehicle code is for employees of the state. And I really appreciated what Bonnie said and also what Ray had said. And I was wondering, how can we do like a car patent, like the land patent? Do we need to do a public notice and do the county recorder or the clerk to get our car out of the DMV?
Anybody want to take that?
I was muted. I thought I was talking. I didn't. Oh. Okay. You've gone into contract. You're in an adhesion contract. You're going to have to go in and do some rescission of signature on these contracts and notice them. I mean, are you talking about like when you get the certificate of manufacturer certificate of origin on the car and the new car you want to?
I don't have the MCO or the MSO. The DMV has everyone's.
Yeah.
I called the manufacturer, and they said the DMV, when you register it, has everyone's.
Put it in trust.
Unless you
put it in the trust, state of California trust. They own it, and they're letting you use it if you're good. So you'll have to do rescission. You'll have to go in. I mean, I haven't done this, but you have to go in and do rescissions of the contract to the Department of Motor Vehicle.
I did do the driver's license 2 years ago. I rescinded my, or revoked my signature, and I don't use the driver's license. But the car is the issue, and they still want their money, and they want to suspend my motor vehicle, even though it's a car. And I've already let them know that by letters, and they said, well, we don't respond to letters. We respond by forms. And I was like, what kind of form do we need it? Because I've already tried seeing if I could send it overseas. And then they asked, well, where's your shipping information? I said, well, I need to know if there's some, like they gave me INF-70 as a form to get information of my car, but that still isn't revoking the car from their registration.
So when you say they, that's another thing too. So a lot of times things happen and people say they did this and they did that. I said, who? I mean, get specific names, titles, numbers, and then find out who is the head of the DMV in California and go straight after him.
I looked on the DMV website and I was able to get chief of staff. And then there was the program that they had for conflict of interest. So I talked to them and they said, oh, we're not able to, we're not lawyers, so we can't interpret the vehicle code for you, because I was letting them know that there was a, I think it was 210-52 that said that if you're driving a car, it's you're employed by the state. And I asked them, what does that mean? Because I'm not employed by the state. And I'd like to get my car out of the DMV and out of the registration. And they said, well, we don't know that, but you can call customer service. And I ended up just sending an email to customer service, but I haven't heard anything.
Yeah.
In a week.
That statute, what that statute means is what you said. None of it.
I think so.
they're showing you is in commerce. You know, they're showing you in commerce and cars in this California trust and you're traveling. So you're going to have to, you know, it's a hard battle. It's a big battle on cars and traveling. And they flip it to
criminal. I even went to the DMV, made a few appointments. And I told them that my pink slip, it says that my name is all capitalized, and that's not how I spell my name. And they said, oh, that's how the machine kicks out everyone's name. Everyone's name is capitalized like that. And I said, well, that's not how I spell my name. I'm not a dead entity. I'm a living woman. And the young clerk girl didn't know anything. So I tried to go on the email to the heads of people, but they're not answering.
I'd like to... ask William if he has any comments that he'd like to add about that. William, are you available?
Yes. The first thing I would do is get a title history, and that'll show your chain of title all the way back. And on it, I know we've seen one in the past where it, on the back of the actual MSO, it said surrendered. Nice military term. And then you want to look at rescissioning that entire document.
Okay.
Another one of my buddies and I, we actually called Chrysler. We found out which plant the two private conveyances were manufactured. And we called them up and we got new MSOs.
Oh, okay.
So I would look at get your title history.
Okay.
And also, you if you have satisfaction of whatever the lien was, if you financed your car or if you paid cash, you should have a satisfaction letter. You should have everything you need.
Okay.
You probably want to get that chain authenticated as well, so that it's a equivalent of the original legal equivalent.
So the DMV gave me the form INF-70. Apparently that's information, and that I think is title history or the information about the car. So that's what I'll do.
In commerce, when you're signing up and putting your signature on their form, they're going to go monetize that too. So you can do it if that's your desire, if you think that's the best route, but I think you might be better served writing them a letter and paying them the fee just to make sure you have the same exact information that their form has.
Are you saying to write them a letter with the, or
so
to go
ahead?
So
their form has line one, your dog's name, line two, what you had for dinner, line three. So you write the exact same thing in your letter.
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And then Bonnie was talking earlier about you've got to rebut the presumption of this and rebut the presumption of that. David Strait has a cool little document. I forget how many. I want to say 12, but it's like the 12 syllogisms of court. And I know you have that document, Rob. People might want to get that from you.
Sure, I'll include that in the replay directory when I send it out. Brenda Teresa is going to send some stuff to me, and I think someone else was, David, was going to send me something, and I'll make sure that all that is in the replay directory.
And then as far as walking around, Ray's going to correct me on this, hopefully, again, for everyone else's benefit. But when we saw all this stuff going on, we went right to crimes in Title 18, which is the first section. And then when you get to the 240s, you've got 242, 245, 247, 249. So, like, Noel has conspiracy right off the bat. And we use 245 all the time, and we've been going into the post office not having any issue until one day they had two supervisors, I guess, maybe the head. And so they wanted to pitch a fit saying, no, you got to wear a mask, you can't be here. And we said no. And so finally my buddy called the police. He said, you guys are criminals. You guys are breaking the law right now, and we have to get the police here to settle this. So they called the police too. Police show up. I just had the Section 245 up on my phone, and I said, you guys enforce codes, don't you? How about this code? It was like 5 minutes later, they delivered our mail for us. I mean, we did it. I did it at one place. When I went back the second time, the lady comes walking up. She goes, you need Matt? Oh, wait, it's you guys. Never mind.
All right.
Excellent.
You know, the local Sprouts. The guy said, you can't be in here. You got to wear a mask. I said, no, I'm okay. Thank you. And I just kept walking. I try to be polite and say thank you. So I just kept walking, and then he got, like, the main guy. And he comes up, you can't be in here without a mask. I said, well, then you're breaking the law, and we have to call the police. He goes, I am going to call the police. I said, cool. I'm going to continue shopping. Let me know when they get here. I've already had this situation multiple places, and I've prevailed every time. So please call. So these people, they go home and watch your TV, and that's their law source. So you are light years ahead of these people.
Yes.
And I created that document for you, Rob. I sent it to you yesterday or the day before in your Skype, and it actually has the code sections. So you don't even have to go find them. And I actually use GPO.gov because when I was down at the National Archives, one of the really awesome guys there said, you know, you can use these in court. As long as it has this GPO.gov on the bottom left-hand corner, it's admissible in court. I said, fantastic. So I go to GPO.gov to get all my stuff.
Oh, I see.
And that's Government Publishing Office, GPO.
Yep. I see your 240s in this document. Is that what you're talking about, Will?
Yeah, it's like 242, 45, 47, yep. 49.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's 45. 45... sounded a lot like that 42-2000H or A or whatever was read earlier. Like, they're probably like two guys cheating off each other in class because they were so similar.
Federally protected activities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they get licensed with the state. You know that, you know, and if it's a food place, you know they got the Board of Health. They're all are bound by OSHA. Tell me one of them that doesn't have OSHA. Like, come on. So... everybody thinks that they've got a little power and they want to utilize it. And I just try to be patient with them.
Right. Know the law, speak the law.
Hold, hey, Robert, it's Todd in Scottsdale. I'm not able to raise my hand. Can you hear me?
I can, Todd. Do you have a question?
I just wanted to make a quick little comment on, our notary publics. If you are going to get something notarized, if you can find a notary that uses an embossing seal, I believe it to be useful. Statute code in most places doesn't call for an embossing seal. That's a seal that raises the paper. However, it's my understanding that the embossing of the paper with the seal allows that document to cross to different jurisdictions, whereas the seal that's not raised does not do that. So if you can get a notary that's got an embossing seal, I think that's
a worthwhile thing to have. And thanks so much, everyone. I'll mute now.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I have a question. A thought just occurred to me today that, you know, we have crimes that happen by these public officials, specifically in the courthouse and the jail, right? I want to own those, right? Because I want to stop the criminal activity. So how do we go back and kick out the bandits and stop the fraud and own the actual building? Because right now, my understanding is that some of these courthouses are privately owned and then leased to the state. But a lot of times they're owned by the judges that do the dirty shenanigans in those courthouses. I mean, it's run by a criminal operation. But if anybody has any thoughts on that, I would love to hear more. Maybe now's not the time because it's been a long call.
I'll say a little bit on that, but it's a, you know, you're dealing with the mafia criminals.
Right.
So the courthouses, the clerk of court, every court case has a QCIP number. They make a security in your name,
right,
for the benefit of the county or the city, you know, depending on which one you're in. And it's going through the CRIS account, court registry investment system, up to the treasury. And you're dealing with, it's really a big mafia thing. So, I mean, the key to my opinion is those issues, don't worry about owning the courthouse, get all of them removed, ruin their career.
Right.
Put them in prison if possible, but I mean, at least, you know, ruin their careers and make them lose their pension. When I did that stuff up in the one town, I mean, I had a lieutenant on the police department retire early. And I found out earlier because he was scared for his pension on what I was doing. The detectives came around and some attorneys told me about that, and they were all researching me, and they will research you now. And they said I was subversive. And I said, I'm not subversive. They are. They're trying to reverse it. But when the girl I know, where I was going down into one county, and I would pull the oath office and bond the mayor and all the city council and all the county commissioners and the county commissioner and all of them. And they want to know, immediately she said, who is that? What's his name? And what did he want and everything? And they ran a background check on me immediately. I mean, I'm telling you, they want to know who you are, and they take note of you immediately just by pulling the oath of office and bond. If you have problems, they're going to act different because they know you know. Because nobody does that. They told me when I called the governor and the secretary of state and got the oath of office and bond on the governor of Georgia, they said, nobody's ever asked for this. I said, well, how about that? I am. So, but, you know, those courts, and see, we're all being shown as minors. If you look in Title I, you know, nobody's at the age of majority.
Right. Unless you stated under affidavit of truth. We always put that in our affidavit of truth. They were born, I'm of majority age.
It goes a little bit even further than that because it says, unless you take control of the securitization account. That's a big study for me and some of my friends.
Right.
Because you're a minor, it says up to the age of 18, and over the age of 18, it says, but if over the age of 18, you are still considered a minor if you're not taking control of the securitization account. So that made sense when I took the CRIS account, not the CRIS account, the court registry investment system. I kept wondering, why are all the court cases shown as a minor? I mean, there's no way that everybody in here is under 18. Then I understood.
Right. And isn't it just filling out a form 56 saying that you are the power of attorney over your trust account that's in your all caps name? Form 56? And
appointment of fiduciary.
Right. Where you're taking control of that account, right?
Well, you know, I can't claim to know 100%. There's been different things, and there's studies with subrogation, and people have gone into court subrogation, and, you know, you're not really here. You come in a special appearance, and I'm not really here. about any of these matters. I'm here as beneficiary telling you to settle and close the account. I'm right. beneficiary of the estate. And what's the penal sum? What's the charge? I don't right. care what the, I don't even argue what the case is about. I'm just saying how much I'm authorizing you to pay it. So a lot of times, you know, people appoint the judge as a fiduciary and tell them to settle it with a form 56. So, I mean, I can't claim to tell you that would be it. If you're in a court case, get anybody in trouble, but there's something to all of it. And that has to be, you know, figured out just like these GSA form 2425As and all. And they're definitely in commerce and they're definitely doing these. The kingpin is the clerk of court. The clerk of court right. is running all the securities up to the treasury, up the court cases.
Right.
And you're really surprised, like when I was reading that little list earlier on the blanket bond, when you go to Dun & Bradstreet in your county, every one of them is shown on Dun & Bradstreet. I mean, all the way to the library. They're all operating a commerce, got a Dun number.
Right.
But the courts are definitely and usually private. They're foreign. They are private. They're foreign. They're administrative tribunals. And that's why when you bring up the Constitution, they'll say, well, you know, contempt of court.
Well,
they're foreign.
Reality is we're foreign too. We're foreign because we're living men and women and we're not subject to their code, statutes, and laws because we're not employees of the corporation. So
Correct.
We're also foreign sovereign.
You're not and the fiction. So you're not the truck. They can only deal with fictions, just like Bonnie said. Right. I mean, that's the thing. That's why the affidavit is so deadly, because the affidavit can only come from a man or a woman. A fiction cannot create an affidavit of truth.
Right, and they cannot rebut it either. Yes. And especially when you challenge the jurisdiction with your affidavit of truth, how are they going to rebut it? They're a fiction.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to, and you're going to win because truth is sovereign in commerce, and all these courts are operating in commerce. I read a really interesting, I'm trying to remember where I read it, 18 U.S.C. 11 and 18 U.S.C. 112, and it talks about a foreign diplomat, right, or a foreign, it's very interesting, because it talks about how they cannot seize us, how they cannot detain us. Just, I believe, with everything that I'm reading, that 18 U.S.C. 11 and 18 U.S.C. 112 is talking about us. We're foreign to their jurisdiction because we're not employees of their corporation, and it's illegal for them to detain, to arrest. I mean, all this long list, that'd be good homework for us all to do, right? 18 U.S.C. 11 and 112 in the 18 code, which is Code of Criminal Procedure, where it is a crime for them to do that to us. That's the way I read it. Tell me if I'm wrong, anybody.
That's true. It's all, but what I was sharing tonight is I'm telling you, pull the oath of office and bond, and you won't even have to go something in the past. You do what I say. I'm one of the people.
Right.
You're in breach of contract.
Right.
They will freak out. I mean, and even just to do it without even filing a claim on it, they see, because and that's the power of a handful of us, because if you have problems, say where you're at, or the other girl that talked earlier, other guy. Well, I mean, you know, where's that at? Oh, it's so-and-so, Michigan or Minnesota. Okay, well, then all I got to do is pop in the computer. I can pull up who the mayor is. Let's just say it's the mayor. And the very next day, I'll call right there. I'll call the city hall. I need to talk. Here's how I do it. I want to talk to, please connect me to the records department. I say, I need to find, they'll transfer me. I say, okay, I want to talk to the custodian of records. Who is the custodian of the records? And they say, well, in reference to, I said, oath of office and bond. Oh. So I get right to the point, you know, and I'm not even in the same state. And I will pull that oath of office right now. Well, then you can imagine, they say, well, now, who's this guy from Georgia? Well, what if somebody calls from Oklahoma, then there's another guy from Alabama, then New Mexico calls, then Colorado, they're going to go, oh. We got problems. And it makes, you've got to put the scare in them, and it will. And we, if a bunch of us go pulling those offs and bonds on them, and then we all file claims once we get the bond information, if one of us get it, we can share it, but still the other ones need to pursue it. Because we all just get the claim form, and about five or six of us or 10 or whatever file a claim on that bond, that person's career is screwed. Because it's kind of like, it's a merit system. It's a, I talk to them. It's like your credit line. It's like, say you have an 800 score, and then six of us make a complaint on us, now you're at 500. Well, we don't want to insure you. We don't want to bond
you.
It's
all about their credit. Right. It's all about their, they'll lose their
so then
they're uninsurable from that point forward. They're a risk.
We're all spread out and separate, and the opponents, as you can see, these people, this Antifa and Black Lives Matter, they're all grouped together. They're being paid, and they are being supported by public officials. They cannot go down the streets with bricks in place and break out windows and burn down stations, and the police sit there and watch without something going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, supposedly it's Soros. Said, yeah.
People want to fight with them when they should say, I'm going straight after the mayor, city council, immediately. And I want them all of them on the guillotine, chopping block. All of them. And just like the Georgia statute I read, violation of oath of office. I mean, I keep articles and everything. Judges, I've got articles where judges are removed from office, put in prison for a year. People, but they don't want you to know this stuff. And we can do it to them and have them put in prison. They can try and ignore one or two, and it won't make a big deal. Five or six, they got a problem.
Right.
And so that's how I say enforcement, because I've seen it work, and I've seen them get terrified, and I've seen them back off. And I mean, I had court cases removed from docket, disappear. And I argue with the clerk of court because I didn't understand what I was doing back then, but I would pull up the guy that summons me. I went after the oath office and bond on him. He called me begging. I do everything certified mail. I did it to the case. I put it in there straight to the clerk of court. I put stuff into evidence, and I got a big package back, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I don't understand. You know, they don't have the discretion to not put this in the case. So I call straight down there. And she said, well, there's no case. And I said, no, there's a case. No, there's no case. No, I'm telling you, there's a case. You're coming after me. I've got the case number. And I didn't get it. She keeps saying, no, there's no case. I'm arguing. Yes, there's a case. No. And finally, I looked down there, and I noticed everything's had black magic markers going through the docket numbers. And then it hit me. I said, oh, I see. There's no case, is there? And she said, no, there's no case. So they just removed it. They stopped it. And that's only from going after the, bringing up the oath office and bond amongst all the stuff. I had a business. They said I had to have a business permit, paid ad valorem tax. Fire marshal came, all that. I said, none of it applies to me. Stuff going after me, and I went back after my oath office and bond. The whole case went, they just dropped it. So, I mean, it's very powerful. Nobody looks at it. Nobody, and it's really easy street. I mean, it's that easy. That as soon as you start bringing it up, it's like a vamp. It's like a light to a vampire. It's like a frost to a vampire when you bring it up. And if you bring it up in court, they really, just by even bringing it up in the affidavits and going into contracts. See, it's contract. We put them, you're putting them into contract with a verified affidavit. When you say at the very last point, if you have 10 points on that affidavit, or if it's 25 or 30, whatever, depending on how much stuff happened, always end it. I hereby accept your oath of office in this matter. We now have a firm and binding contract in which you will protect my rights as you swore, so help me God. They freak out. I'm telling you, because they show it to the attorney and the attorney says, and then that's how you can enforce all these other things everybody else is asking about. Just do that first. Just do it. Accept the oath of office. All right. I accept your offer of contract. You and I are in contract. Now you're going to obey. I'm one of we the people. But, they'll record. I guarantee they will record those land patents if you enforce it, or they will be out, and you just got to be able to go all the way. I mean, you got to be like that, like in the movie Outlaw Josie Wales. get mad dog mad, do it. I mean, you know, it really comes down to, especially right now in America, we're all down to a point, which I'm really trying, I see it, even though it's not as bad here, but it's not as bad here because a lot of us just won't take it. I mean, I go out every day ready to get in a fight.
Where are you?
Or confront the police. Oh, I'm in Georgia. Yeah. I'm in Georgia. I'm below Atlanta. I mean, I pack heat. I pack heat. I wear a pistol. I'm not messing around. I'm serious.
Yeah, as we should. As we should. We have that right, yeah. Right? You're a living man. You're not a corporation. You have rights.
We went up
you
to
don't have privileges. Corporations only have privileges.
I just talked to the police.
Right.
Yeah, and talk to the police and the sheriffs and talk to them and just walk straight up to them. And you know, and I do that. I make them shake my hand. Some of them, they don't want to because of this virus. But I was up there. We had to take a bridge down up in North Georgia, 400 Atlanta, and the police had it blocked. I went up there and I took, you know, I got like five or six mags with a Glock 27 and I got a carbine. It's loaded, you know, and I told the cop, I said, hey, you're going to watch our back? Because I'm counting on you. Because if they come, if any of these troublemakers come down here, you know, you need to let me know or you need to watch our back because I'm going to my truck and I'm locked and loaded right there. And I'll back you or you can back me, however you want to do it. But I'm not tolerating nothing, zero tolerance. And so that's what it's going to take from the people. Another thing is when we were talking about Title 18, also understand there's capital felony treason. There's a whole list of 2381, 82, 83, 84, 85. You know, those are very powerful too. Capital felony treason is what a judge does all the time, you know, or some right. of them. Yay. And so, but then, you know, do the oath of office first and you bring that up second and they backpedal, they crawfish. You know. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it's going to have to do with, you know, I know it's different states. I think this is more predominantly, I don't know if it's just that way in the South as opposed to some of the areas, but where you can call us rednecks or whatever, but I'm just not really going to put up with any of it that's going on around. And I see it as if anything happens, it's payday. If it involves the law, I'm not talking about criminals and, you know, Antifa right. and things like that. But if they mess with you, it can become payday for you because they will have to pay when you come after that bond. The check man will come. Let me tell you about that too. So let me tell the group real quick and getting late on the east side, but of the country. So a lot of times when you do these things, I found out I shoot competition. So I shoot with law enforcement. I shoot tactical, running gun, three gun. And I encourage everybody to shoot competition and shoot. I am telling you, the election is coming. I think something's going to happen. I feel it. I mean, this is one reason I'm so adamant about all this pulling their oath office and bonds too, because I know they're behind it supporting whether they know it or not. Something's going to happen here in November or before because the powers to be do not want Trump to be reelected. He's doing more than meets the eye across the TV, of course, because the media is controlled and there's stuff going on behind the scenes, but be aware something can go down and I feel it. Look what already has happened since March, which we know half of it's made up or orchestrated. But when you come against them, the county commissioners, there was a guy when they were doing stuff incorrectly in the next town up. He got so mad because it was anti-gun legislation. He went straight to, and people that are in the system are apathetic and are just like us. They're not all bad. So he went to the clerk of court. No, he went to the federal courthouse. He told them what they were doing. He said, I'm a deer hunter. I believe in the right to keep and bear arms, this and that. And the girl at the federal courthouse said, well, my husband's a deer hunter too. And I deer hunt. I believe you. She said, what I would do is I would sue them. Don't say anything, but I would sue them with a Title 42, 1983. They told him that at the federal courthouse.
You could drag any of them in under any statute through that. That's your doorway. That's your automobile. You pack your Fourth Amendment.
Right.
Fifth
Amendment, What I'm getting at is the people at the federal courthouse were telling this guy to sue the county. So So they gave him the paperwork. Most people don't know it's online, or they'll give it to you at the federal courthouse on how to file these pleadings. And he sued them. I helped him with the thing. I said, they're going to 12B6 you because you're going to say failure to state a claim, which relief can be granted. If you don't understand, they're going to try and answer it with a motion, which isn't pleading, which is required by the Federal Rule of Civil Procedure, but you have no money awards you're listing. So anyway, he verified it all around. So then I get called from another guy who said he's disappeared. What do I think happened? I said, well, they either killed him or the check man came. And what people need to understand is, you know, when you come against them, the check man might come. And what the check man is where they pay you money and sign a non-disclosure to end it right then on the spot.
Right.
Yeah. So he disappeared. My buddy called me. He came. This guy was so broke, I had to loan him $50. He was so broke. I said, well, what group are you with? He said, I'm with no group. He told me a story. We went and talked to the girl. I figured it was some study group, you know, like this, like us. So he says he's back. Now, he was so broke, I had to loan him money to buy groceries. We go to his driveway. He said, let's go talk to him. Okay. There's a brand new Mustang GT and a brand new Chevrolet Tahoe with black. Both of them are black with tinted windows in the driveway. So they'll do that. He didn't want to talk to us, came to the door, been on vacation. I thought, vacation? I mean, you couldn't buy groceries. So I don't know how much they gave him, but they gave it to him to back off from the county commissioners because he had them served right in the meeting. Two of them started crying in the meeting. Nothing about wet their pants. I'm serious. Yeah. And so, I mean, we have that power, but we just have to really do it. But we have to do it. You don't want to get too complicated. And I guess one reason what I'm trying to get across is the oath of office and bond are very simple. It's in the statutes. They're holding them down there at the courthouse. Go get them and say, this is the, I'm reading oath of office. This is the contract, the terms and conditions. And you're going to perform to the term conditions, or you're in breach of contract. That's a tort claim. So they'll, a lot of times you never even have to get that far. They'll just back up and change their whole personality or drop everything or whatever, you know?
I've sued about 5 judges in my county. They all know me.
Oh, really? Oh, good for you.
I love to dance in federal court. Yeah. I know that rule book.
Where are you located?
I'm in Texas, just south of
Fulton. Is this Bonnie still?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that was you, Bonnie. Gosh. Okay. I've heard about your, I wouldn't mind learning more about, you know, some of what you've done.
Well, I can make it really short and sweet. I sued the county sheriff and jail management company for the death of my father, who died pretrial detention for a traffic-related offense, and he was dead within 3 weeks, an innocent man, never had a jury trial, right? Mm-hmm. Dead of pneumonia. So it took me 2 years. I found an attorney finally, and this was, I mean, I was just a dumb slave like anybody else. I didn't know anything about anything. I just knew, oh, well, you know, there's an injury here. Let me find an attorney to help me. I didn't know anything else. God had me on a journey, right, a learning journey. A blessing. Every trial is a blessing. Every one of them is a learning opportunity. So I sued, and then they retaliated against me. But I prevailed because we had a really strong case. And before I even hired an attorney, I went and collected all kinds of open records requests and got all the hospital records of when he was finally hospitalized right before he passed on. But the county settled with me. And my brothers, my 3 siblings. Anyway, from that point forward, they've done a lot of retaliatory things. I've done some YouTube videos kind of telling my story in more detail. But they have ripped my life apart. They have come at me with guns ablaze. I would love for them to send out the check man so that, you know, because litigation is very stressful, right? It's very taxing. It's very draining. It drains your energy, your joy, your life. But God has me on this journey for a reason. So I turn around, I help other people and show them things. And I mean, it's a privilege, right? Because we have an opportunity to really help and bless other people, because other people don't know. They are dumb slaves like we used to be. I don't mean that in being mean-spirited at all. Don't get me wrong. But there's a lot of people that are really, they know something's wrong, but they don't know how to wrap their head around it. They don't know. You know, we've gone through the accelerated learning curve if we've really been in the trenches and we've been injured severely. But you're right. I mean, that's one of the easiest ways is to go after their bonds. And that affidavit of truth is power packed. They cannot win. When you have a federal claim and you can win before you even go in the courtroom doors. You send out that affidavit of truth and they don't rebut it. You send them notice and opportunity to respond, second notice, third notice, mm-hmm. notice of judgment as a matter of law, give them a fine amount. 1.5 million, 115 million, whatever your magic number is of what you think your injuries are worth. I mean, I believe God, when he gave us our rights, that God's rights should be vindicated generously to us because, I mean, goodness, it cost God everything, right? He sent his son to free us and now we're enslaved. So I like to put big numbers on my rights, right? Anyway,
yes.
When you send out your affidavit of truth, insert, oh, by the way, here's a list of my fees. Here's my transgression fee schedule. You know, it's a 5-page document. It lists every crime that's out there that you can infringe upon my liberty. You're going to pay me $250,000 for this, $500,000 for that, and give me your fee schedule. And so hold their feet to the fire when they infringe upon your liberty. Hey, you had notice. You had notice I was a living woman. I'm not a corporation. I'm not an employee. I'm not a minor. I'm, of majority age. And I'm not a mental defect because they call us imbeciles. So we have to, go up against that rebut that presumption in an affidavit of truth. And guess what? They have you've boxed them in. They have nowhere to go. So when you walk into federal court and they've had notice opportunity to cure and you gave them 3 opportunities to cure and they never responded, never did a rebuttal affidavit, you get a summary judgment. They have to pay you. I mean, it's pretty much that simple. Right? They can't do the 12B1, the 12B6, failure to standing. No, I've got my federally authenticated birth certificate. I am not a debtor. I'm a creditor to the United States of America. Look, Pompeo signed my federally authenticated birth certificate. Here's my evidence that I have standing to sue your ass. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to be so blunt, but that is standing. That is standing. When you have that federally authenticated birth certificate, you can do whatever you need to do because you just proved yourself in both state and federal levels that you are alive, right? That's the power. You're not a dead corporation.
What happened when you sued the 5 judges? Did they dismiss the cases and want to make it go away or what?
Oh, yeah, well, it was a big cover-up because they did a lot of really, I can send my pleading to you, you can read it, but they wanted my stuff to go away, and
yeah,
I filed notice of appeal because they gave the 12B1, they rendered all these immunities. And again, I was a baby at the time, learning, had a big learning, steep learning curve, learned a lot since then. So I can go back on a 60B motion or fraud, claim fraud, because that's exactly what they did when they defrauded me and my. Because, again, statutes, even the federal statutes, they don't apply to me. It applies to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they cannot – a statute that enjoins your First Amendment rights to redress, you attack the statute and you find it unconstitutional. You don't have a right to interfere with my rights to due process, my rights to open court, my rights to redress my grievances. Sorry, your federal codes don't mean anything to me. My rights trump
Hello,
your
Barnes.
Codes. Hello.
And President
anyway.
Stewart, hi, this is Joshua. This has been a great game so far. Did you authenticate that certificate of live birth for non-Hague treaty sentence?
Yes, I did.
Bonnie, when they have some states only apostille, they tell you that they only apostille, which is for Hague countries, and they won't authenticate. What are you familiar with?
Yes.
I'm quite familiar. I didn't mind. I sent it on off to, at the time it was Rex Tillerson, and had him authenticate for a non-hate treaty country. And he's above the state of California, so I'm not worried about it. But then, Bonnie, I took a copy, I photocopied that, authenticated your live birth, and I introduced that in as a exhibit in the probate name thing of assignment case that I opened up for myself. I did a DBA of the county as well for the first and the last, and the last comma, or so say, surname comma given as the name holder. Because, you know, it's a misdemeanor to do business in any name not registered on your county, because people say you can't in California. Well, I can't do that. That's a problem. I put a copy of that in the probate name thing. They didn't put it in there. It's the CLOB as a, what do they call it, lodged under seal, so nobody can see the info on the library. So if you go ahead and use old that, what you do is, the NC-100 package, this is how I ended up getting banknotes from Vital Statistics. I did the name change of assignment. Nobody told you to change the assignment from nobody after 7 years of abandonment to now you, the beneficiary. That's over the addition, you know, last time a given. It's addition for person who last and relationship to the name he, person whose name he changed. I didn't check the box for itself. I checked other, and I wrote living heir to the intimacy estate. And reason for the name change, I wrote something along the lines of having retained the age of majority, withstanding in capacity, petition request, removal of minor disabilities, capital diminution of maximum status, and a decree at the change of assignment. And they gave it to me in a tentative ruling without me even having to go to court. Next, about a week later, a police officer tried to cite me. I handed him the DBA. I hadn't even opened my letter back from probate yet. But my degree. They actually had my hand at the time.
Joshua?
And he wasn't. Yeah.
I'm getting a variety of messages that you're hard to understand. You have a couple of issues. Your connection is kind of giving us a little bit of trouble, and maybe you might not be loud enough or clear enough. Sorry.
Darn.
Yeah. I know, because you have a valuable contribution.
Well, yeah, I've seen a few questions in the chat. People want to know more. And because earlier I kind of wanted to chime in when you were talking about, if I talk louder, is that better?
Yes.
Can you hear me better?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm using Wi-Fi. I'm on a little Android. But you say on Wi-Fi with your guys, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's just completely secret, it might be.
You're kind of drifting out again.
All right.
Well, very, very bad.
Now, that helps. I took, once you get this court decree, you're changing your name. You're going to match whatever's on your birth certificate in all caps, and then as the what's called the present name in California forms anyway. And then the new name, you put your the exact same in.
It's worse.
Okay. Now yeah. You have a tool that you can use to force. Now, when I went to the, I took it to the Social Security office and then to the DMV. Okay, and I walked into the DMV and I said, a new certificate of title, not a duplicate. And here is the name that you are to input into the machines. She said, you know, like you people said earlier, it'll only print it in capital letters. But on the back end, it does save it in the upper lower. It was interesting because
can y'all hear him?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't really. I can't really hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Now, I mean, you're clear, but you're a lot less in volume. Joshua, we might have to move on. Unfortunately, maybe you and I can have a conversation, and I can record it, and I can send it out to the people that are here listening. Is that all right?
Yeah, anytime. Yeah, I love to talk about it.
Sure. Yeah, and you and I haven't spoken in a while. It'll be good to catch up.
Have we talked before? I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah.
John Jingle brought me into this Zoom. I didn't know if I'd ever even been in one of these before, so I didn't know about them. But thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, glad you're here. I'm going to send you a Skype right now so you know who I am.
All right. Cool. Thank you.
There it is. You recognize me now?
Robert. Hey.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Been a while, no doubt.
Yes.
About a year almost. Cool.
Yeah, may have been. May 22nd, it looks like. We had a little bit of a, yeah. Okay, yeah, I'll check back with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rob?
Yes.
Rob? This is Fran chiming in. If I just share a quick situation that happened with me today, and it's kind of part and parcel with everything that's been talked about.
Sure.
And certainly want to thank you, thank Ray, thank Bonnie, and everybody who's contributed. As you're aware, I've been dealing with a foreclosure for some time now and an unlawful detainer. And things did not go my way in the at-law courts. And so I've moved on to a different path here in equity and trust expression. And today I went in to the justice court and I spoke with one of the clerk admins and told her that I required an exemplified copy of the court docket from the justice court, the unlawful detainer action. And actually, I had that conversation with her on Tuesday in personam and then again today. And on both occasions, she said, well, we usually don't do exemplifications unless there's a judgment. And there was never a judgment in your case, and there's no money judgment. And I said, you know, that's not the point, and that's not the purpose for me requiring the exemplification of the court document. And I said, quite frankly, there's been enough other violations of my constitutional rights and the fact that I've been denied substantive civilian due process blatantly in court. It's on the written record. And so we went back and forth, but she was really kind and gracious, as was I. But she then said to me, well, you know, Fran, if she said, you can go back and capture the videos. You can request copies of the videos of each of the hearings, that those are all kept on record. And if you would like, we can go through your case docket and you just tell me which ones you want to pull, because everything that occurred, whether it was, you know, I had submitted affidavits to no end, affidavits of truth that were never rebutted. One of them was an affidavit for want of authority and bond, which was demanded on multiple occasions, both in writing and before the judges, and it was denied. So there are a multitude of indiscretions that happened within the hearings. Well, the great news is she was able to turn it around for me in less than 24 hours. And so now I have a DVD of the actual court hearings in which all these violations occurred. So,
wow.
And now per Bonnie, you know, I had the opportunity to listen to one of your seminars that you gave in Texas. And so now I'm going to go through and create my affidavit of truth. And it will be supported both by the DVD, and then I can get a written transcript where all these things are laid out in black and white and now in video. So I just wanted to share with everybody that if you've been to court and you've been railroaded and you accepted the bond and oath of the judge, which I did, and I bound her to it, and now I have that on video, and now I can get a transcript of that, go create my affidavit of truth. And, so just that much more, ammunition. And I hate to use that word, but just wanted to share that. And the clerk was incredibly helpful in, making sure that I understood what information was accessible to me.
Fran, I've been with you for a few years. I'm very excited to know that you have that evidence.
Yeah, I am too, Rob. I was blown away.
Thank you for sharing that. Well, let's see. This call has definitely gone a lot longer than I had expected, but I think maybe we should wind it down. Ray, I really want to thank you for, you know, everything that you gave this evening, and everybody else who contributed. Appreciate all of you. I would like to invite people to consider registering for next month's call. We'll get you some more information out about that. And just want to express my gratitude to the Creator for all of you, for your support of this meeting, and for your participation in preserving our sacred gifts together. Ray, what a generous gift. So with that, I would like to say goodnight, and I look forward to learning more with everybody soon. And so we'll see you guys next time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Yep. Thank you, Ray.
Yep.
Good night. Thank you.
God bless everybody.
God bless.